Hey, folks, and welcome to today's podcast. Unfortunately, Lalo Schifrin has passed away on June 26th. He was 96 years old. He was a guest on our program way back in February 2007. Interesting that it was one of the earliest interviews I ever did here, and he comes off, I think, super charming. He's really a clever guy. He's obviously a really smart guy. He's passionate about music, and he has some sort of philosophical takes on some of the questions I ask him, and he's kind of got a little bit of a sense of humor, just to, you know, and he was a super busy guy. I really wasn't expecting him to say yes to do this interview, and was so happy we have it now. I listened back to it, and I guess what I was feeling mostly was, because this was one of the earliest interviews, is that I really missed some opportunities here to follow up a little bit. I wish it was longer. I wish I had followed up more. Not that I'm a super great interviewer these days, but I think I'm a little bit better than this. But I do think overall it works, and it really gives you a window into what makes this guy so interesting. And that's what, I guess, these interviews are all about. It's just an incredible musician, and if you don't know his stuff, you know, there's hundreds of film and television soundtracks, and some great arranging, some great piano players playing. There's just great music throughout his career in so many different, you know, he used his talent in so many different ways. So super interesting. I do apologize. There's a little bit of weird kind of buzzing on the line. I think it was a live interview, and I just think in those days the WFMU, the part of the soundboard that had where the phone came up, just had a little buzz in it. So I apologize for that. I did my best to clean it up, but it's still there. Just a little bit. So anyways, enjoy me here and Lalo Schifrin.
Hello, Lalo.
Yes.
Good morning. Welcome to WFMU. How are you?
Hi, how are you? I was expecting your call.
Tell me how you started playing piano as a very young boy.
Yes.
And tell me, when did you start to play jazz? And were your teachers supportive of this?
No.
Where did you first hear jazz music?
I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And my father was a concertmaster of the Buenos Aires Philharmonic, so I grew up in classical music. But when I went to high school, some classmates who liked jazz and were jazz fans started to bring records, and they lent me records, and I started to listen to them. And at the beginning, I listened to Fats Waller and Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, but then when I discovered Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, I became totally converted, and I realized that music was extremely difficult. You know, it was as difficult to play like Bud Powell as playing Chopin, you know.
Hmm. And what was the reaction of your parents, of your teachers, when you decided to pursue jazz?
Oh, they liked it. I mean, my teacher, not so much, but my father and my mother, in general, they were very tolerant. The only thing that they didn't want me was to continue a career in music. My father, being a musician himself, knew how difficult it is, and he saw the danger of becoming a jazz musician. I would have to be playing in nightclubs and exposed to all the problems of drugs, alcohol, women of the night. And as a father, now I understand it, but at that time, I didn't care about all those things. I only liked the music.
Right. Your father was the concertmaster for the Philharmonic Orchestra of Buenos Aires for many years.
35 years.
At age 20, they sent you to Paris to study music.
Well, I was already going to the law school because my father wanted a career. That is, he wanted a diploma. So I went to the law school, which was the easiest one. In the curricula in the University of Buenos Aires, the first 4 years of law school are easy because I did that, and I did 4 years in two. But then I was at that moment I was studying composition with a greatest exponent of avant-garde music, 20th century music in Buenos Aires. His name was Juan Carlos Paz. He was a composer himself. And the other teachers that I had before of harmony and all that, my father also had a master class of violin in the National Conservatory of Music, and he recommended me a teacher who was for harmony and composition, very conservative and very... I got very bored with him. As a matter of fact, just listening to jazz records and by ear, I discovered in harmonies that he didn't have a clue. But on the other hand, Juan Carlos Paz, I went to one of his lectures. I was so impressed that I asked him if he gave private lessons. And he said yes, and I started to take private lessons with him. And that was the beginning. Actually, he was the foundation of my writing. He told me that the Paris Conservatory was granting scholarships by contest, by competition, through the French Embassy in Buenos Aires, violin, cello, piano, and composition. And he says, if I would be you, I would apply for composition. And I said, do you think I have a chance? And he said, you have nothing to lose. So I did it. I got it. And all of a sudden, I went to France. To the chagrin of my parents, not only because I completely left the law school, it was the separation. They'd never been separated from me up to that point.
You're a young man, and arriving in Paris in the early 1950s, was there a great culture shock for you coming from Argentina?
I already knew a lot about French history. I knew the French language. And I knew a lot about the French music.
You must have had the time of your life.
Yes. it was one of the greatest periods of my life.
Was there a moment where you thought you might become a lawyer?
No.
Well, thank goodness.
I was doing that strictly to satisfy my father.
You came back to Buenos Aires, and you started to work as a writer, as an arranger, and you started your own concert band. And
yes, I put together my concert band. Everybody thought I was crazy because I was doing a band that, in the tradition of the big bands of Dizzy Gillespie and Count Basie, and they thought, even the musicians who loved jazz, they said, you are wasting your time. When I went back to Argentina, it was only for a visit. I was going to go back to Paris, but some people started to encourage me. The majority said, no, don't do it. You're wasting your time, and this is not a place to do it.
Did it take a while for audiences to...
No, right away. I mean, there was an audience that was ready, the young people. They were hungry for this kind of music.
So it was during this time that Dizzy Gillespie's passing through, and he...
6 months later.
6 months later.
This is exactly 50 years ago. 1 month more than 50. It was in October of 56 that he came with the State Department band. And one night I was asked to play. They did a tribute to him, a dinner, and for him and his wife and the members of his band. Quincy Jones was playing in his band, Phil Woods, Billy Mitchell, Charlie Percy, the great jazz music, Melba Liston. So I did play for them after the dinner. And, of course, Dizzy heard my piano playing because I conducted from the piano. After we finished, he said, did you write these charts? I said, yes. Would you like to come to the United States? I thought he was joking. but here I am. When I first came, it took me 2 years to get a green card. I came like a legal alien.
So during that time, you were scrambling to find work because you couldn't take a regular gig. Did you do any other unusual one-off projects during that time?
No, I was the only thing I was doing was calling Dizzy Gillespie, and he never was home. He was always traveling.
You mentioned, we keep saying that you're a very accomplished pianist and a composer and an arranger and a conductor. Are those jobs all part of one thing, or are they separate things for you?
Totally separate. They are all within the realm of music. The piano is one problem, and you have to practice. It has its own techniques. The composition has its own problems, and you have to solve them and bring your imagination combined with your technique, with the technique of writing. It's a different technique. And then the conducting is the baton technique. It's a non-verbal form of communication. With the baton, the musicians have to understand what the whole thing is about and play. The baton has no sound, but they have to play, but the baton has all the indications of what the musicians of an orchestra must do.
Is there, if you could only choose one of these things, would you choose to be just a pianist or just a composer?
No, I am a music maker. I have to do music either with a baton or with my fingers in the piano, or with a pen on score paper. Yes. I express music by all these ways, and I wouldn't be happy if I had to sacrifice one of them.
Right. Yeah, your piano style is very unique, very original. How do you describe it? Where does it come from?
Oh, from my influences. Bud Powell, in jazz you're talking. Bud Powell, Bill Evans, Oscar Peterson. Actually, I don't consider myself a great innovator in piano. I think I accomplished more things as a composer.
Let's talk about the album Piano Strings and Bossa Nova. This is one of my favorite albums. It's a really unusual sounding album. It's very lush, but yet the rhythm section is very spare. What was your inspiration behind this?
I was working for Verve Records, and Cree Taylor, who was the A&R, the director of that, and he suggested I do that album.
Yeah, I guess Bossa Nova at that time was really becoming a big thing.
Well, I was the only, Stan Getz and me were the only non-Brazilian musicians that participated in the big Bossa Nova festival at Carnegie Hall, where all the great stars of Antonio Carlos Jobim, Jorge Gilberto, Sergio Mendes, they all came to this country, I mean, to New York to play that concert,
right,
performing that concert.
So when you finally left Gillespie's band and you started to do scores, this became like a whole new world. You've written over 100 film scores. How did that start, and is it something that you plan to do?
Well, I always been a film buff. I always liked films, and I always, when I was living in Argentina or Paris or in New York, I paid a lot of attention to what we call audiovisual counterpoint, the contribution that music can make to the images.
Some of the films, Cool Hand Luke, Bullet, Dirty Harry, Cincinnati Kid, you know, they've become really just the paradigm of what exciting film score should be, and so much so that the music has spilled over. You know, people are listening to the music just for enjoyment, you know, separated from the images. When you start a project like this, are you handed the script and you just start writing immediately, or how does that work?
Sometimes they give me a script. To tell you the truth, from the script, you know the story, but that doesn't give you, at least it doesn't give me the ideas. The ideas for me come from the screen.
So you wait until you can watch.
Visual images that inspire me.
So how long does it take to write a score for a feature-length film?
About 5 to 6 weeks.
5 to 6 weeks. And that's just you sitting at the piano the whole time?
No, I don't have to use the piano. I have a desk also. That's why this music is a language.
Mm.
And if you know the language, you don't need to. Sometimes I use the piano if my fingers take me to a melody or something, but the basic writing I do it at the desk.
That's amazing. I mean, you do realize that to a layperson, that's an amazing an amazing ability.
No, wait. I told you music is a language, and you can learn the grammar, the syntaxes. Yeah, for the layman, maybe it is, but any language that we don't know, for instance, I don't know any Norwegian. So if I, how do I write a poem in Norwegian? I can't. But if I study Norwegian, then maybe I can.
Let's talk about Mission Impossible. The TV series came on the air, and did you remember the instructions? Did they say what they wanted?
No, they didn't give me any story. They wanted just something promising, that promise adventure, mystery, suspense, and that's it. I mean,
the first two bars of that song are, you know, as memorable as any two bars of music. When you were writing it and recording it, did you think it would last so long?
No, I had no clue. Like anything I have done, it was lucky that the television, they do pilots. Pilot shows that to see if the network is going to buy or not.
Mm-hmm.
I've done so many pilots. So many of them didn't sell because the odds of selling a pilot is 1 in 10 that you do possible, they sell. So I was lucky because I wrote music for other shows that maybe they are better than Mission Impossible, but they never, nobody knows about it because they've never been shown.
That's very interesting, right? Yeah, I mean, it's quite an exciting song and an exciting soundtrack.
And the series became very popular too, so that helped too.
Do you listen to music for pleasure or are you too busy making music all the time?
Well, this is a good question. I have a gym. I do a treadmill, and when I'm at the treadmill, I listen to music, and that's the only time in the day I do.
That's funny. I do the same. What music do you listen to on the treadmill?
Well, my record collection is by alphabetic order. So, for instance, I have Bach, Beethoven, and the Beatles. Together, or Miles Davis, together with Debussy, because they're with a D. So I go every day a different letter, and I decide if it is going to be classical or jazz or whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
Today I was with a P, so I listened to a record of Oscar Peterson.
That's great. You're a busy guy. You tour all around the world with symphony orchestras. Is the traveling still something you enjoy?
Oh, yeah. It's to be in contact with live audiences is great.
Right. And tell me about your family and living in Los Angeles. Is that something that, do you feel like a Los Angeles person or more than an Argentinian person?
On one hand, I am Argentinian born, American citizen, living Angelino by chance. And I travel all over the world and I became a citizen of the world too.
Well, what's coming up in the next few months for you?
Well, I'm doing a record this at the end of this month called Lalo Schifrin and Friends with James Moody, James Morrison, Brian Bromberg, Alex Acuna, different players.
Mm-hmm.
I have concerts in Paris, Geneva. Then I have two movies, Rush Hour 3 and a British movie called Love and Virtue. And then I have a concert with John Faddis and his Chicago band in September. So as you can see, I'm extremely busy.
You are extremely busy. Well, Lalo Schifrin, it has been really a pleasure to talk to you. And I wish you all the best. And thank you so much for visiting with us on WFMU.
Thank you very much. And good luck to you and to all the listeners.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.